And it is 2 o'clock on the West Coast, and it is time now for your appointment with Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth, and what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Brad. And what is on my mind today is birthdays, specifically my birthday, which was Friday, and I turned 65.
Wow. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you. And so, yes, it's been on my mind quite a bit. Actually, the whole idea of birthdays is kind of a conundrum because people have very personal relationships to how they want to think about or participate or not participate or acknowledge or not acknowledge their birth date every year. And I think that the way that we approach our birthdays probably says a lot about our own kind of personal psyche overall, our personal feelings about ourselves or our place in the world. I don't have any research to back that up, but just from my own experience and just my experience, you know, with my family and my children and my friends, everyone has a very unique way of wanting to be acknowledged or not. And I think about, like, with our kids when they're little, it's so important. We're marking that time, you know, they came to the world and we're so excited as parents and we want to celebrate them. And, you know, it always is this interesting, just, I don't know what the word is, combustion of the parental excitement and then the actual fear of a one-year-old when they have the cake in front of them and they're so excited and they put their face in it and everyone claps and cheers and then they cry. I've never been to a one-year-old's birthday where they didn't cry because it's so terrifying that everyone's all of a sudden clapping and cheering while they're eating the cake. And, you know, then 2, 3, 4 years old, that birthday comes everywhere and the kids know it's a special day, but usually, again, crying ensues at some point because it's either too much stimulation or, you know, they're tired. But we just really want to make sure we make it feel special for the kids. And having been that parent and wanting to celebrate all the birthdays, it's not until probably like 5, 6, definitely around 10, you know, when the kids start to realize, oh, this is my birthday and it is a special day and I want to have my friends over and have cake. Like, they can kind of handle the overwhelm of the celebration and being the center of attention. But those first 5 years, it's really more of a celebration for the parents that they made this human being. And I've often wondered why we don't actually celebrate the person who birthed the child on the birth date every year. Because although we're excited that the child has come into the world, especially those first 5 years, like, hey, I actually think that I should get some sort of recognition every year on this date for the experience of bringing this human being into the world. And really, children, you should come to me and say, Mom, what an effort to bring me into the world. And having said that, I do remind my children every year when their birthdays are coming up. When I started labor, I will start texting them and say, just to remind you that 30 years ago, I was in labor. And then throughout the day or throughout the night, I'll go, I'm about 7 hours into it. You know, now I'm 30 hours into it. And so it's kind of been an ongoing, haha, I think it's funny. I don't know if my girls think it's as funny as now, but I do feel like that honoring of the birth should start with the person who created the life. That's one thought I'm having about it. The other piece is how do we celebrate the people that we love and want them to know how important they are and meaningful they are to us if there's someone who doesn't really want to make a big show of it all the time? Like, my husband definitely is not a big party person or center of attention person, although I have forced a few of those parties on him over the years when he turned 40 specifically. But it's not really his thing. But there's just this driving desire from our kids and friends and, you know, family. It's like, oh, we really want Chris to feel so special. It's like, how do I respect his kind of just wanting to do a solo backpack trip to mark the time with everyone wanting to somehow be involved? Again, this conundrum of the birthday celebration. And then there's the individual experience of recognizing the passage of time. And I'm going to say this with a giant disclaimer out in front, because this is my own personal bias, I'm sure. My own personal neurosis around it. I have a hard time when people say, oh, it's just a number. I don't even think about my age. It's just a number. Or, you know, I just never think about growing older. It's like, that's fine, but it is a little bit of a euphemism and a little bit of a denial, because time does pass and things do change. And again, probably because from my therapeutic perspective, this desire or this need to actually mark and intentionally notice life's transition is important in our development as human beings, and being able to kind of go into like deeper thought spaces and to recognize that things are different. But I also agree that turning 65 does not make me feel old. I would have really resented any black balloons showing up at my house.
Right.
I never understood that for 40 and 35 either. It's like, I don't understand the black balloons thing. So again, my preference. But I also don't understand the just blowing birthdays and dates and times off like none of it really matters. Because historically, in many traditions, birth dates and the time passage of those birth dates are really significant and are almost spiritual in their honoring of certain dates. For example, in Chinese culture, and I want to side note to say that I knew this fact for a really, really long time. But because I'm getting older, I thought that the significant birth year was 65. But actually, in Chinese culture, 60 is the year that is most celebrated in someone's lifetime. So I kind of missed that mark, but we'll just let that go. 60 is the most celebrated major milestone because it marks the completion of one full 60-year cycle in their traditional calendar, that you've the blending of the 12 zodiac animal signs and the five elements. And when you reach 60, that means you've lived through every combination of zodiac signs and elements. And so you are, in their culture, resetting your entire life cycle. Now you've completed this giant experience of living through all of these different seasons. And so it's symbolic because you're resetting this life cycle, and it symbolizes reaching old age, which again doesn't mean death or decrepit. It's just you've aged out of youth, and you now are in this place where you should be embarking on this new respected age. In this culture, children show their filial piety by honoring their parents with large parties and gifts. I missed that as well, thinking it was at 65, but that's okay. But my point is that there are, you know, historical markers. 30 is another one that's very historically symbolic and significant. And for a great deal of history, people didn't live past 30. So that was old age and near death. So today, this idea of birthdays and transitions and what the marking and passage of time means and how we can set goals or not set goals or celebrate or not be celebrated. I mean, I clearly have my sense of what this all means, but I'm always curious to know how other people mark or don't want to mark the occasions of their birth or their birthday or those ages or those times. So that's where we're going to go. We're going to open up the phone lines today and just see how people feel about the idea of birthdays, which I titled The Conundrum of Birthdays. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you are invited to be part of our show. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can also reach me after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram. Leave me a message. I'm happy to respond. And you can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. All of our shows are there. And you can podcast the show to listen at your convenience. Or if you'd like to share the show with other people, we'd appreciate that as well. Just go to wherever it is you find your podcast, Spotify, NPR Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. Search A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist and hit subscribe. And if you leave a review, that would be helpful because other people can then find us. So that's where we're going today. Birthday conundrums. Are they joyous? Are they a day of mourning? What is a birthday to you? We're going to take a quick break and come back and start our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Seems I've got to have a chance to see every night I have the strangest dream. Impressing by the way that could have been left you on my own. So it seems I've got to leave before I start to scream. Pour some light the door and turn the key.
You feeling all right? Oh,
I'm not feeling too good myself.
Oh,
yes, sir.
You feeling all right? Oh,
I'm not feeling that good myself.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Celebrating 65 years, spinning around the sun. You know, I don't usually have trouble with birthdays. Did I say that at the beginning? Generally, I really enjoy the celebration. I'm a solo birthday person. I like to kind of spend the day by myself and think about, I don't know, what I've been doing or what I'd like to be doing, setting new goals. I really like new days, new starts. I have always enjoyed that. The only times I've really had trouble with birthdays, I really struggled when I turned 30. And I'm not sure why, but that really was a challenge. And I ended up sitting in a bathtub at a hotel in Cambria and crying for the entire day. My husband said, are you sure you don't want to go out to dinner? I go, no, I'm okay. I'll be fine. And so I kind of moved through that time period. And in looking back on it, again, symbolically, 30 is also a marker of a definitive transition in our lives because we're moving from that youthful exploration to more mature adulthood. You know, we're assessing our life choices, our career choices, our personal identity. I was married and had a 5-year-old at that time and felt like, oh my goodness, all this heaviness of choices that I'd made, and here I am, and it's all going to maybe slide downhill. There's also this sense in our culture that 30 is this deadline for some societal milestones like getting married or embracing the authentic you with more self-assurance, kind of letting go of the childhood roles that you had played. So 30 is a big one. And then I did fine, enjoyed them all, loved turning 50, and even enjoyed turning 60. But 65 kind of hit me 6 months ago, and I've been just kind of really slogging through the whole thing, knowing that a lot of things are changing. And it's not, again, because I feel old. It's because transitions are challenging. Just knowing that we're going from one known place in our life to kind of an unknown place. And there's that long journey between those two places that can cause a lot of dissonance and anxiety and conundrums. That's the word that keeps coming up for me until we get to that new place. And I feel like I have embarked on a journey of sorts where I've leapt off the shore and I'm kind of swimming through this sea to whatever is going to be next. And although I have some idea of what it is, you know, I'm retiring from Cal Poly, but not 100% retiring, but kind of retiring. It's a retirement dance. I know
how that is.
Yeah, I had to, you know, get my Medicare card. So that was an interesting, that's a like hello transition and social security, just all of those things. Like I'm aware of all of these things that are ahead of me, but what I'm not aware of, what I'm swimming through the sea towards is me in this iteration of me at 65 and beyond, which I didn't really hit at 60. I think I was still floating like my 50s and 60 kind of all blended together. But this is feeling different, and I'm just curious how that's hitting other people. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. Is this Marvin?
Yeah, hi, Elizabeth.
How are you doing? Thanks for calling in.
My pleasure. Well, happy birthday to you, first off.
Thank you.
Maybe I shouldn't say happy, but, you know, birthday. Congratulations.
Birthday. Thank you so much. What's on your mind with this topic?
Well, I was just calling because, you know, I celebrated my grandfather's 90th birthday on Saturday.
Wow.
And I also turned 30 this year myself. And so I've been thinking about these milestone birthdays and how, on the one hand, arbitrary they are. On the other hand, they cause these moments of reflection, as you've been saying, in one's life and what's happened and what's still to come. And that's, of course, different turning 30 versus turning 90.
Start with 30. What has it been like? So it's funny you called, and I was just talking about how there's this big symbolic marker of turning 30.
Yeah, I didn't know that about 30, really. I mean, obviously it's a big one, but I didn't know that there was this importance around that number in particular. Although I have been surprised by, as you were saying, feeling the sort of adulthood crashing down upon me, that there's the expectation both societally and within myself that I'll have more figured out by now. I'm no longer a kid and need to have a lot kind of figured out, which, you know, I have more figured out, but there's still some work to do in that department, I would say.
The youthful exploration starts to transition to mature adulthood.
Exactly.
What's part of the intense self-reflection? Is it about evaluating your accomplishments, do you think? Or is it about wondering if you're living to your potential, setting goals? Like, what is it that comes up?
Yeah, I think it's about a little bit maybe of all those things, but also just feeling like, you know, life is very complex. And it's, you know, maybe as a kid, or when you're younger, you think, oh, by the time I'm 30 or 40, I'm going to have everything figured out and everything will be neatly in place and it will all feel kind of easy. And of course, that's not the way it ends up turning out. Even if you have a relatively good life, which I fortunately do, there's still a lot of, you know, just the logistics of being alive, of emotions and relationships and economy and all those things that you have to figure out as an adult, which are just, you know, it's hard work being human.
Do you feel hopeful for your future as a 30-year-old and at this time?
Well, on a personal level, in my sort of own emotional journey, I do feel hopeful. On a societal level and as a country, I have to say I don't necessarily have huge amounts of hope. I mean, I hold on to some. I'm not a nihilist, but I do think it's a challenging and somewhat disturbing time to be coming of age in this country and world.
Does it make it more challenging to set goals?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, everything's the moving goalposts and the on many different levels, just the total unpredictability about even the near future makes it, I think, challenging to decide how I want to live or what I could do conceivably.
Right, because just a generation ago, there was still the kind of conveyor belt of opportunity that you were kind of guaranteed that if you followed this path and took these steps that you would ensure, you know, home ownership or an ability to go on a vacation or retirement. That was kind of laid out for multiple generations. And I'm wondering if you at 30 are feeling that same kind of promising trajectory.
Yeah, it's not, no, in a word, it's not clear to me that that's a smooth path. I mean, you know, the upside of that is I think me and people in our generation are questioning some of those, you know, standard metrics of success and are forced to reflect more on what makes a good life, what do we actually want, not just accepting the, you know, sort of boilerplate American dream narrative as, you know, the white picket fence and the nuclear family as the end-all, be-all. But then, you know, everyone needs security and be able to live well. And so there's, you know, there's that as well.
And then going to the far end of the spectrum, your grandfather turned 90. How is that experience for him? Did he have any sage words to share with everyone?
Well, one of the things I love about my grandfather is that in an otherwise very gregarious and talkative family, he is a man of few words and has been for a long time. But when he speaks, they're always carefully chosen and they hit all the more because he doesn't say very many of them. So I think he just expressed gratitude for the life that he's had and and being surrounded by people who love him. And, you know, that at the end of the day, that feels meaningful and more than he could have ever even hoped for. Mm-hmm. So no wisdom exactly, just gratitude, which I guess is a kind of wisdom maybe.
I think so, because that was part of the introduction for me today, that birthdays, you know, hit us in different ways. Like some years it's the hammer over the head at turning 30 or 65. But then on many other birthdays, it maybe is just that quiet moment, that simple reminder of the gratitude of another year. And maybe in some ways a sense of surprise that he's still here.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think there's and I know from my father who's 88, you know, for him, everything after 78, when he lived past his own father's age, everything for my dad became kind of gravy. So for him, every year is like, oh, another year. Who'd have thought?
Absolutely.
And there's a freedom in that.
You can drop me. I'm just curious if maybe for you, if how that 30th birthday that you spent in the bathtub in tears, you know, how you kind of moved on from that moment, or how the rest of your 30th year played out after that kind of birthday moment of reflection.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think much like what I'm noticing now at 65, and now because I've lived long enough, that I recognized at some point when I got out of the bathtub that I had to continue on, because I was a mom by that time and I had responsibilities. And it felt like this kind of the slogging bit of it starts to lift, the clouds lift a little bit, and then you start to see this next space that you're moving to. And I think the challenge is that not the actual change, that the hitting 30 or hitting 65 or whatever that transition is, maybe going through a divorce or, you know, finishing college, that itself is a moment of, whoa, this is heavy. But then it's the unknown journey to what you don't know is coming next, which feels like the heaviest time. And over the years, I've realized if I can just allow myself to enjoy the swim across the sea, or whatever, however, you know, metaphor you use, slogging through to that next place, if I can allow myself to trust that I will end up someplace, it's not as difficult. It's still challenging, but I can go through it with more of a philosophical experience, like, oh, I'm feeling really out of sorts, or I'm feeling like things are really different. If I trust I'm going to get there, it's less painful. I think that at 30, I didn't know these things. And so mostly I felt kind of fearfully moving forward. And then at some point kind of woke up and went, oh, no, I'm okay. And this is good. And let's go forward. It was like a sunburst through, or I hit land. But this would be my only like advice or therapeutic knowledge, is that the more we can let go in those moments of dissonance or fear or grief or unknown, the more we can let go and just trust and move forward, that things do fall into place. And it's when we try to hang on and grip to our reality, not wanting to get older, not wanting something to change, right? We grip and say, I refuse. Then that's when we get into trouble. That's when depression hits us hard, or anxiety or loneliness, or those neurotic responses, when we really bear down and refuse to allow the time passage to occur. That's where trouble starts. It's not in the journey. It's not in the challenges of the journey, because that's movement. It's when we refuse to allow the transition or the journey to happen.
That's very helpful. Thank you. That resonates with me.
Thank you. I'm so glad you called, Marvin. I hope you'll call again.
I certainly will. Have a great day. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. What is your feeling about birthdays and the passage of time in those years? Were there significant birthdays for you, or did you just kind of slide on through all these years? And as I mentioned earlier, everyone has a very personal relationship to their birthdays. What about you, Brad? Are you a birthday guy or a leave me alone guy?
No, I'm actually a birthday guy, and it's
It's because of things that happened early on in my life. Both my parents passed away very young. My father at 39, my mom at 49. I had best friends pass before the age of 45. And so in my 20s, I was very fatalistic. In fact, my wife will tell you, when we met and we were just colleagues and friends, the second thing I told her was, well, we were, I think I was 28 at the time, 27. I said, well, I'm not going to live to see 30. So, you know, let's be friends now.
I've only got 3 years left.
Yeah, and then I became 30 and that was okay. You know, all right, great. Then my wife and I got serious about being together, and because she came along as a package deal with a couple of young kids, I realized I needed to get serious about my life.
Yeah.
And so the next big one for me was 39 when my father passed away. And after that continued into my 40s, and when I hit 50 years old, I kind of relaxed a little bit because, as you mentioned earlier, those two milestones were where you see these things come up, and you know those are the gauges that you measure how your birthdays are. So after 50, I realized that I was in a good place. I had overcome all of the mistakes of my youth, and I had built something that was a positive thing. And as I turned 65, it was a big deal for me to be 65 because I realized I reflected that I had accomplished so many things that my parents only dreamed of.
Right.
Moving to the coast, owning my home versus, you know, leaving a mortgage to my sons, and that kind of thing. And so gratitude has been the watchword for us these days. Be grateful for what we have. I don't like getting older, but it, as they say, it beats the alternative.
Well, that is true.
And if I'm going to be older, I'm going to enjoy myself now a little bit more because all the time now is a gift.
Yeah, and it's the gravy.
So I turn 66 next month, and my wife is right about your age, too, and she's going to have that big milestone coming up this month, as a matter of fact. So it's a big reflective time. You're not alone here. you're really not alone. And so we want to welcome you to the club of the thoughtful seniors heading into whatever it is next that we're trying to figure out.
And it is a giant club because I was, you know, looking into all the milestones of turning 65, and Kiplinger said that in 2025, a record 4.18 million Americans reached age 65, the peak of what they call the peak 65 phenomenon of this generation, with an average of 11,400 people turning 65 every day.
Wow.
So I'm clearly not alone.
Nope.
And then the surge of this continues through 2026, where we are, as part of the peak 65 zone with 4.1 million annually, over 11,000 daily, driven by what we are, the tail end of the baby boomers. I am now officially part of what they call the gray tsunami. So I know that I'm in good company. I know that I'm not alone. And I know that how we enter into this is important for the next phase of our life because we're the models for those coming up behind us, like Marvin, who called in. I feel a lot of responsibility to do my aging well because I want to leave a legacy of something I would be proud or okay for my kids to follow. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. We're talking about the conundrum of birthdays and how is it that we all experience them. We all have a personal relationship to what our birthdays are like. We're going to take a quick break and come back and get to these phone calls right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. And I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. Yet all the night's magic seem to whisper and hush. Yet all the soft
summer light seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more morning dance with you, my love? Can I just make some more romance with you, my love?
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. And Trish, thanks for calling in.
Hi.
Hi.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so much. What's on your mind? What inspired your call today?
Well, I'm one of those people that don't have a problem getting older. It's always good. I'm healthy, thankfully.
Yay.
But what I've always been interested in the time of year that your birthday falls, because my birthday falls 2 days after Christmas, and it's never been a good time. People are tired.
Mm-mm.
They're done partying. They don't want to give gifts. They just don't want to play. So on my 50th, I'm 67 now. On my 50th, I threw myself a birthday party in October. And it was at the Avila Yacht Club. It was super fun. And it was the best birthday that I ever had, because it was a time when I didn't have to share it with a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And people weren't busy. And so that's always interested me. Like, I talk to people like your birthday, that's a really nice time of year.
Yes.
To have a birthday.
We do. So, I used to end up on Easter once in a while, but for most years, no, it's like right in the middle of spring. Perfect time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, and my mom's birthday is Christmas Eve, and she had the same experience growing up, that it was mostly a nuisance that her birthday was Christmas Eve.
Yeah. And I think it forms you in a certain way. And I would love to see a study about that, how people, I don't know how that manifests itself in your life, where your birthday falls.
When you were a little kid, did you get to have parties, you know, or did it kind of get blended into the holiday?
You know, I don't remember a lot about my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember a few times, here's your birthday and Christmas present. And then a word to your audience. If you do have a friend whose birthday is around Christmas or Easter, or don't give them a birthday present wrapped in
Christmas gift. Exactly. Exactly. Well, and for my mom, at one point we did a half year birthday. So we did it in June. So it wasn't even close. And that felt really meaningful for her, because it's always been kind of, we tried to do her birthday Christmas Eve and then only do Christmas Day to somehow. But I think you're right. I think there is a psychological piece of that. And also, I thought about the kids growing up when they're younger, because they said, you know, birthday consciousness doesn't really happen for kids until they're about first grade. But if your birthday is in the summer, when everyone was not at school, that was also a challenging time to have a birthday, because it was, you couldn't get everyone together for a party.
Right. And I remember in school coming back from Christmas break and everybody's talking about what they got for Christmas and what they did for Christmas. And there was no, you know, mom bringing in cupcakes or anything.
Exactly.
There was no school. And my husband, his birthday is the 29th of December, 2 days after mine. So it's Christmas. 2 days my birthday, 2 days his birthday, 2 days New Year's. And so we decided a few years ago that we're going to start celebrating our birthdays in September. And every year we forget.
Which is the beauty of getting older.
So, you know, we just embrace what it is. But and our kids have been great about it. They always try and make it a little special. But it is an interesting, you know, I don't know if it has to do, I'm not a big believer in like astrology and what sign you're born under and stuff, but I do wonder if there's a correlation in personality between birth date and, mm-hmm. you know, how you live your life.
Yeah, and how you can be celebrated. I like that. That's a good thought. I'll have to look into it.
Okay, let me know.
Thanks for calling, Trish. Enjoy your day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're talking about birthdays, and I never thought about, I definitely think about the astrology part, but yes, what is it like if you grow up and you never get to really have that party where the kids can come or you get cupcakes? Because there is that birthday awareness that starts to hit around elementary school. And then it kind of changes a bit, you know, by junior high, high school, it becomes more like one or two kids come over. And the whole birthday. And then is there a point where we're too old to have a birthday or have a party? I don't know how people feel about that. Like Trish talked about throwing her own party. It was the best ever. So maybe when it's on our own terms, it's like, I want to celebrate that I'm here. And there is such a personal, again, as I said earlier, that personal relationship that we have around our birthdays.
Right.
And how it's celebrated. I'm trying to think of my brother and sister because my brother was never, and maybe because he's a boy, and maybe, I don't know if I'm being a genderist, but because he, I don't remember celebrating his birthday too much, but when he turned 40, my sister and I decided to give him this epic weekend-long birthday, and we just invited all of his friends, and we were just rented this house for the weekend, and said, you can come anytime. We'll have food all weekend, starting Friday night through Sunday, and just pop in. You can stay overnight or stay for the day. And it was really, really fun, because for him, he didn't really know who was going to come. We said, just show up, which he would do, because we're his sisters. Just show up. We're doing this for the weekend. But he had no idea there was this parade of people, and I think he really enjoyed it, but he has not asked for or done anything since, so maybe that was enough for him. But I don't know the whole personalness of,
you know, I do have to interject. My wife, yeah, and I've had this discussion in the past, and she was the first one to make the observation, but the more I thought about it on a personal level, the more I tended to agree with it, that we know that men and women mature at slightly different rates, we,
yes,
believe, right?
Yes.
But her contention, and I tend to agree with her, is that men really don't start getting it together by and large until they're out of their 20s. They might be working hard and developing something, but they don't really start to get it together and become adults until they're into their 30s at some point. And then they spend that time forward kind of
catching up.
Catching up, basically. and I can attest to that.
Well, and I mean, there are like the developmental differences that also are shaped and influenced by what happens in their life, because some young men are, you know, pushed into situations where they have to grow up quickly. I think part of the challenge of our current cultural narrative is that we've stopped pushing young men. And that's a whole nother show, because, you know, when you stop pushing a man and giving them, because there are differences in the developmental process. And again, it's not universal. So there are outliers. Some people are different. But if you just look at the group of young men in a mass, the majority of them need to have some push. They need to have a sense of purpose. It's why, you know, as much as it's a controversial thing to say, something like the military, something that gives them purpose and foundation and structure, is an important kind of growing path to put their life in order, or having a project that they work on. That's why I'm so big on service years and doing AmeriCorps and Teach for America and Peace Corps. It doesn't have to be military, but to have some structure and meaningfulness and purposefulness is important for young men, because that's how they kind of make their space in the world. And as I said before, for women, and it's not all women, there are differences, but in that kind of mass middle, for many women, they don't have that same need to be structured and have that foundation, that there is almost this inherent sense of motion and purpose that women have. But yet, again, another show. Our number is 805-781-3875. How is it that you feel about your birthdays is the topic today, and maybe not just yours, but the whole idea of birth itself. Chris, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I want to say happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
And being a Leo,
oh, okay,
I like being celebrated. I like people to see me having fun.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a birthday coming up. I'm thinking about how I want to spend it. Should I do a solo backpacking trip, mm-hmm, or be with family? And then,
yeah,
I realized, oh, a lot of the family is going to be with me. So that already decided it. That'll be great. I'm looking forward to that.
Did you feel this way when you were young? Did you have parties growing up? Did your family do parties?
Yeah, I had a few pool parties. Heck yeah.
Okay. And did
you... So there's a tradition, at least PG&E used to give people they got a paid day off on their birthday. Mm. I always thought as, you know, a salary person, working person, I thought that was really cool. That was good. My employer didn't do that. I don't know if PG&E still does it, but it's kind of cool.
So if you have a birthday day all to yourself, how do you like to celebrate? Are you a reflective person? Do you spend a day in reflective thought? Or are you more of a doer? Let's go, you know, take on that mountain all I can. I mean, how do you like to honor that passage of time?
Probably not so reflective as more of doing something fun or, you know, something I don't always get a chance to do. And as I get older, and we, you know, every year I lose a few more friends or close acquaintances, I think more and more about cherishing what I have, the friends that are gone and they can't do this. So more of a doer.
But then it's funny because you just talked about reflecting a bit, though, on those who have passed and can't do it, almost like you're carrying the mantle for them in some way.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Yeah. How about aging? How do you feel about the aging process?
I have mixed feelings. I mean, I don't, my health is fairly good and I'm doing well. I'm able to do what I want to do. But, you know, it's a challenge at times to see my friends get older and losing friends.
Yeah.
But watching my children and grandchildren grow and seeing them go through things that I did when I was their age is just the best.
It's the golden. I appreciate that. Thank you for taking the time to call and for the birthday wish.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. That was nice.
That was very nice.
You know, that aging process does come with it the sadness of losing friends that Chris brought up. And I'm thinking about kind of that, the gift of aging. And yet if you go live to be 90, as Marvin's grandfather has, then you're going to also experience a lot of grief because you'll outlive so many of your peers and so many of the people you cared about. And there's, you know, this in the psychotherapy world, this idea of having practices. You know, we talk about having people have yoga practice or a meditative practice, you know, those things that kind of ground your life. And there's also this belief that if we are lucky enough to age, that we should create a grieving practice, that we set aside a time each day or once a week where we sit with our grief. And some people create an altar to those that they've lost, or just an altar in general, or something in their place in their backyard that's quiet. And to take that time to sit in kind of that grief, that sadness, that acknowledging and letting go of, or not letting go of, but actually transitioning that relationship. Because when someone dies, we don't get over them and move on, but that relationship transitions to a different kind of way of loving someone, because they're not in the present moment, but they're in our hearts and our memories. And so that is another piece of the whole aging and birthdays idea, that the more we are able to grow and age and enjoy life, we also have to be willing to go through the process of grieving and loss that comes along with it. And I remember years ago, Neil told me about a song called I Wish We Were Vampires, and I don't think we have it close enough to grab it, but it talks about this couple and how in love they are in their relationship, and that they wish they were vampires because inevitably one of them will die first and leave the other to grieve that loss. And I think, oh, there is that bittersweetness of, wow, you know, I want to live to be 90 or I want to live to be 100. But then there is that inevitable having to deal with the grief and loss.
Yeah, you know, there's a song by this group I mentioned to you by the name of Ghost over the years. And there's a song that describes a couple at the end of the world, basically. Mm-hmm. When it all burns down, I will hold you close. I will hold you close for the minute it takes. And that's true love right there, you know. When you talk about talk about grief and remembering people, one of the things that struck me as I was thinking about it was, and I know modern technology can get a lot of flack, but mm-hmm. one thing that's comforted me in the modern age is I do have some videos of, I've taken on my phone over the years of some people who have passed on for one reason or another. Pets, too. And mm-hmm. I find great comfort when I see some. I mean, yes, it brings up those feelings, but they're, that little part of them is still alive and with me through that. And, you know, unlike the old days where you had giant things that you had pictures that you had to go through, now it's more at the...
It's living in your hand.
It's living in your hand or on your... Or on your frame, or whatever, what have you.
But. That's your grieving practice. If you should say to yourself with intention, "This is my grieving practice," and then it will set in your psyche more meaningfully than just, "Oh, here's a moment." But if you say,
"I really like that,"
this is my grieving practice. I'm going to set aside this time, and I'm going to intentionally engage with these memories. And then you set it aside, and it really kind of fills that spiritual space in us.
As you are marking this time, do you have that sense of? I know for me over the years, the transitions that I've gone through over the years, they seem like discrete, separate chapters of a book or of a life. Do you have any sense of those things like preschool versus post-school and, you know, pre-motherhood versus, you know, post-motherhood and you know, grandmotherhood and so forth?
Yes, I wish that I had tracked them better because as Trish mentioned in her call, my life behind me kind of fades away. I don't have a lot of like direct memories. You know, my husband can talk about specific things that happened when he was really young. And I can tell the stories. And if I see pictures, I know the story. But you know, that in that visceral feeling of being that person fades. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have a lot of the visceral feelings, but I definitely know that things are moving beyond and that I'm moving towards something. And I feel like I'm moving much more towards this wise elder. I don't know if that's the right term, but I'm a crone, definitely. And that I know my position. I think I step more and more into knowing my position in my life. And that feels good. I feel more rooted in my role as a grandmother and as a wife and, you know, as a mom, but all those roles, but really the grandmother piece. I think the last 6 years in preparation of turning 65 has been this coming to, I don't know if it's peace, but an understanding. I also cut my hair, which is one other piece like that felt very freeing. I've had very long hair for a long time and I cut half of it off, not short, but a good chunk. And that was almost like a ritual letting go of something and kind of seeing myself in a different way.
Not for nothing. The hair looks fabulous.
Oh, I appreciate that very much. This is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And Jerry, thank you for taking the time to call.
Yes. Happy birthday. What a wonderful way to celebrate.
Thank you. I appreciate you. What's on your mind today?
Well, both my girls were born in September. 2 days apart, the dates, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And one was born on September 11th at the exact moment the planes hit the towers.
Whoa.
And I didn't even know that it had happened because everybody was protecting me.
Well, you were busy.
But,
you were very busy.
Yeah. And but the interesting part is that, you know, be careful with your words and your thoughts, because inevitably somebody would say, "Oh, September 11th, what a horrible day." Well, yes, it was, but it was a good day for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at first she didn't quite understand it, but the response is, "Oh, your birthday's on September 11th. I'm so sorry."
Oh no, that probably doesn't feel very good.
No, and it, you know, it broke my heart because she would just look at them, you know, with her innocent big green eyes, and you know, it was awkward, and she still gets it, and I still get it, but it's just like with circumstances like that on a day that pivoted the world, you know, it was hard on her.
I bet it was.
And Yeah. So,
but she also pivoted your world, which was a beautiful thing.
Oh, gosh, yeah. It was the best day ever. And then, but it always happens every single year. And she's now 24. And somebody always makes a comment, you know, that it doesn't hurt anymore, or you just kind of look at them and go, well, it was a good day for me because I had a baby.
That's right. And you'll remember it differently. And one of my friends reminded me, her birthday is April 15th. And she said, my entire life, everyone said, oh, you're just taxes. She said, and it's funny now, but it wasn't funny because I didn't understand it for so long. It just felt like people rolled their eyes whenever I said, my birthday is April 15th. It's like, oh. So, yes, you're right. Yeah. You know, how we respond to people's birthdays. And as, you know, Trish mentioned earlier, too, when we're born, what's happening at that time does impact us and how we kind of move through our life and, you know, how we see our place in our life, because it is a moment every year that we do take a time to either say, yay, I'm here, or what happened or what is happening. I have a question for you, though, Jerry. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that there's a part of me that really wants to celebrate my daughter's birthday as my birthday because I did the birthing. And what do you think about that?
I don't know. I guess it's a double-edged sword, I guess, huh?
Well, we do. I mean, that labor that goes into it, I think, deserves some honoring. And maybe those first few years when the babies, you know, really aren't aware of their own birthday, that we should have more. And this is actually on a more serious note, because we talk a lot about the challenges that birthing women have after they have children with postpartum and can go into postpartum depression. I mean, where there's a real struggle with that identity change that people experience after they've given birth. And then I wonder if we added to kind of the birth process those first few years, a reminder for the woman, hey, you did this work, you brought this human, we honor you for this effort and the time that you're putting into nurturing this child. And, you know, maybe it would be a way of kind of helping that postpartum transition and helping young women kind of move their identity from, you know, being a solo person to now being a mother. And over those years, like each year on that birthday of that child, to say, look at what you've accomplished. I don't know. I'm starting to think it's a thing.
I think that's a really great idea, to be honest, and to honor the mom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because we really have a tough time, more so now than ever, with helping women transition that identity. We spend a lot of time telling young women, you can have a baby and 6 weeks later put them in childcare and go back to work. You know, that was the whole promise of the second wave of feminism, that no big deal. You know, just you can do it. Everyone does. You'll get your baby body, you know, pre-baby body back. But it's not really true. And so for the, you know, millions of women who don't have that easy transition and they feel like they don't want to leave their child at 6 weeks and they don't want to have to, you know, move into their life, or they're not really sure of who they are now that they've had a child, I think we need to maybe create more traditions and rituals around helping women make that move into their life as a parent.
Yeah, honoring them. Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just saying, that happened, now go back to what you used to do, because that can never be the same.
Right.
Well, Jerry, I appreciate you listening to me.
Yeah,
and I appreciate you calling.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful day and happy birthday in September to your daughter.
Thank you. You as well today.
Thank you. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We have time for probably one more call at 805-781-3875. As we talk about birthdays, that conundrum of birthdays. Some years just kind of fly on by. They feel like, oh, it's just a time to think about the fact that I'm here, a simple reminder, that moment to be grateful, forgetting another year. And then some birthdays whack us over the head and are this really transitional milestone, whatever that is. For some people, it's 40, could be 50. In Chinese culture, it's 60, which I really like that tradition, this idea that you've completed an entire life cycle of all 12 signs of the zodiac and the five elements. You've lived through every combination and you're resetting your life cycle from that point on. I love that piece of it. And there is that transition of who we are and that identity that comes, and maybe not exactly on dates, but around those birth dates, that acknowledgement that things are changing and that we are growing and that things are different. And to take that time to sit with those thoughts or sit with what this means to you can be really helpful in resetting the clock or developing a sense of gratitude, or because sometimes when we just let things slide by, we don't recognize the milestones, they catch up with us later. That all of a sudden you wake up and you're 45 and you went, oh my gosh, I haven't done anything with my life. Like there is a reason for rituals and ceremonies and coming of age or rites of passage. They've existed, you know, predated our civilization, that cultures forever have had these rites of passage and rituals. And there's a reason for it, because it gives life structure. It gives life this sense of meaningfulness, this moving forward, that acknowledging time. And when we don't stop down to note those milestones, we tend to have it catch up with us later when it's too late to go back and make any shifts. So that's just my thoughts for today. I am Elizabeth Barrett, and this has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can find me on Instagram, on Facebook. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can podcast our show. Find us, leave a review, share it with others. But as always, I do appreciate you tuning in each week at 2 to discuss whatever's on my mind. I'll be back next week, and I look forward to hearing from you as well right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
And happy birthday, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Hear you say lights taking you nowhere.
Angel,
come love, baby. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. Come love, baby. This might be the lost, but so. Opening doors and pulling some strings.
Angel,
come love the baby. In walk luck and you looked in time. Never look back, walk tall, act fine. My sweet, don't break my heart. Doing all right, but we gotta get smart. Wish upon day, I believe, oh Lord, I believe all the way. Run for the shadows, run for the shadows, run for the shadows in these golden years.
There's my baby lost, that's all.
Me hear you say life's taking you nowhere.